It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. Some of y'all might have heard I made the cross-country move from LA to New York last year, and Wayfair has definitely helped me create the feeling of home wherever I am. I love a cozy couch and a comfy living room that feels like our little sanctuary for our family. And I love vases, I love candles, I love anything that kind of makes you feel at home and peaceful. Anyway, something about me is I love options when it comes to making my home more me. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. Everyone loves a good deal. I mean, who does not want free and fast and easy delivery? Come on. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to Infertile AF, the podcast. This is episode 305 called Kina Granis. This episode is sponsored by Pixel Care. Guys, can I be real about something? I'm a pretty organized person, but when I was going through my own fertility treatments, I found it really challenging to manage my various medications. It was so hard to keep track of when to take what, the dosages, and what was coming up next, not to mention the nightmare of coordinating my insurance and my medication deliveries, and the total overwhelm of opening that huge box of 4 million meds and like 65,000 needles. Pixel Care is the app I wish I'd had back then. It's a complete fertility support system designed to actually make treatments easier and less stressful for fertility patients. Pixel helps you keep track of your medications, your dosages, your deliveries, and your side effects. It also has a 24/7 chat where you can talk to a medical professional about anything regarding your cycle, from medication questions to insurance benefits. You can get tips and watch how-to videos for any medication you're prescribed. And because Pixel connects to your pharmacy, you can track your inventory and request refills before you run out of what you need. On top of that, there's a library of articles that answer all of your questions, as well as groups where you can talk to other people who know what you're going through. Head to pixelcarehealth.com or download Pixel Care in the App Store for free and start making your fertility journey easier starting today. Again, that's pixelcarehealth.com, pixelcarehealth.com, or download Pixel Care in the App Store. I so wish I had this when I was going through it. Thanks, Pixel Care. This episode is supported by Embryo Solution. If you're navigating infertility, and I'm so sorry if you are, have you ever thought about embryo donation as a family building solution? Embryo donation is when one family that has gone through IVF donates their embryos to support the family building efforts of another family. And Embryo Solution is an agency with an important mission to fill the gap between infertility and excess embryos by connecting all parties involved. Embryo donation costs approximately 30% less than traditional IVF. Embryo Solution is an inclusive agency working with single parents, couples in committed relationships, LGBTQ+ families, and more. With Embryo Solution, you are able to choose between an anonymous and an open relationship with the donor family. Plus, Embryo Solution ships the embryos to the clinic of your choice. So whether you're looking to build your family, or you've gone through IVF and you have embryos in storage that you're not sure what to do with, Embryo Solution can help. To find out more, go to embryosolution.com. Again, that's embryosolution.com. Thanks, Embryo Solution. This podcast is sponsored by Receptiva DX. Receptiva DX is a powerful test that has helped thousands of women who have experienced recurrent pregnancy loss or IVF failure. The test helps detect inflammatory conditions of the uterus that might be preventing you from becoming pregnant or staying pregnant. The most common underlying condition of a positive Receptiva DX test is endometriosis, with or without symptoms. If you or someone you know has struggled with IVF, Receptiva DX may give you the answer and treatment protocols you're looking for. Talk with your doctor about Receptiva DX because the journey is worth it. Don't let uncertainty overshadow your fertility journey. Explore the possibilities and talk to your medical team about Receptiva DX today. The best part? Infertile AF listeners get a special discount, so make sure to ask for the test and use code INFERTILEAF24 for $75 off. Again, that's code INFERTILEAF24 for $75 off the Receptiva DX test. Thanks, Receptiva DX. Okay, guys, before we get started, I just want to let you know that Fertility Rally is there for you if you are looking for a safe space to land, if you're going through infertility, building your family through ART, all the things. So check us out at fertilityrally.com and on Instagram at Fertility Rally if you have any questions at all about the membership, what it entails, or if you want to check out a support group and see if it's your jam, please reach out to me. I'm happy to hook you up. Let me know. We just want to make this easier for you no matter what you're going through. All right, so on to our guest. Every once in a while, you meet somebody who is just super big-hearted, that you feel really connected to. That's how I felt when I started talking to Kina Granis, who is a brilliant singer, songwriter, musician. You might know her song called In the Waiting, which is about her own infertility journey. So we're going to talk about everything that she went through while she was in the thick of it and where she's at now with all of her family building stuff. And I just want to say I really appreciate her insight, her clarity, the way that she's able to describe the things she felt while she was going through it. I mean, it's no surprise she's a brilliant singer-songwriter because the way that she puts things into words was really powerful, I thought. So without further ado, this is Kina's infertility story. I'm so excited to talk to you. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. So I have to shout out our Fertility Rally member, Karen, who during a Fertility Rally call a couple of weeks ago said, you know, you have to listen to this music. This has been getting me through your music. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to reach out to her. And I reached out to you and you got back to me pretty quickly, which was thrilling. So did you know that we'll get into your whole story, but did you know that your music has been helping people through their fertility journeys and just through hard times in general? Have you heard that before?
I've heard a couple, like early on after I first put out one of my infertility related songs In the Waiting, like a friend of my husband's reached out and mentioned that it was played at some support group that's, and I was like, what? Like, I know that my listeners listening, but the fact that it was like getting to the people who needed it, got it, was like, ugh, it's still like very moving to me to know that it's reaching people who need it.
Yeah. I think that people are always, you know, especially when they're in the thick of it or in the waiting, as you say, always just struggling for some sort of connection, something to connect to, whether it's a song or a group or a Instagram account or just another person in general. You know, that connection is so important because this can be such an isolating process and it's so lonely. And, you know, I've talked about a million times before on my show that I felt so alone when I was going through all my infertility stuff. So it's just awesome that you're putting, you know, using your experience to help other people. And it's so authentic and beautiful. So thank you for all the beautiful music you've produced, not just infertility stuff, but I told you before we started recording, I've been listening to it all morning. I love your cover of Dream a Little Dream.
Oh, what a song.
Oh, it's so good. That's probably, that's like one of my favorite renditions I've ever heard of that for sure. So, okay, let's start at the beginning. Have you always wanted to be a mom?
Yes. I think I always wanted to be a mom. It was just, I was so lucky to have like a very lovely childhood and just like, it was so magical. And so it was just like clear to me, like, well, this is awesome. I want to do this someday. And then, so this is kind of like, I knew that's where I was headed, though this is maybe jumping ahead a little bit, but like having to go through 5 years of infertility and like, ask yourself over and over and over and over again if you want it and like watch people struggle. It was interesting. Like most people are like, I want to have a kid. Boop, I have a kid. And you're like, I want to have a kid. Okay. Now I have to choose this 1,000 times while I watch people around me go through like the difficult parts of having a kid and how intense it can be. Like, do I want a kid? No, I do want a kid. I do.
Right. It's like, it really makes you question
about it too much.
Yeah. Absolutely. It really makes you question yourself. And, you know, I always say to one of my kids is not through IVF and one of them is, and I, you know, love them both the same, obviously, but it's so funny when you do go through infertility, how wanted
those children are.
Yes. And it's so evident. One billion times.
Right. Like I would pay anything. I would give myself a million shots, all that stuff. So let's fast forward a whole bunch and talk about when you did start to try to have babies. What happened?
Yeah. So I've always been very like good student-y. So before I even started, I was like, you know, taking prenatals for months and like got super clean diet. And I was like, I'm going to nail this. And read all the fertility books and learned about ovulation and cycles and temperatures and all this stuff. And I'd been temping for like years, taking my temperature every morning. So I was
Had you really?
Oh yeah. It was a little extreme. I don't know why I was so into it, but
was this even before you knew that you were going to have some sort of issues or just in general?
No, I think I just, maybe it was like a couple of years before we actually started trying. I knew it was like on the horizon. So I was like,
okay, getting prepared.
All figured out. Yeah.
That's so impressive.
I knew my cycle and I knew when the temperature shifted and so we started trying and nothing was happening. And I was like, this is normal. This is what happens. I remember the first shift, looking back, it's so funny because it was like no time relatively, but I think for my age at the time, it was like after 6 months, my doctor was like, if nothing's happened after 6 months, like come back and we'll just do some preliminary testing, but still don't even be worried. Mm-hmm. So I remember hitting the 6 month mark and it felt so heavy because it was like the first hint, I was still super in denial, but like the fact that I even had to go to a doctor again and I couldn't just like go through this so innocently.
Totally.
Yeah. And like, even I want to say in those first 6 months, like people were dropping like flies around me getting pregnant, you know,
right.
As they do.
Oh my gosh.
Like
it's such
first try. And you're like, okay, I can handle this.
Yeah. You're like, I love that for you.
Yeah.
It's no. And we joke about it obviously, but it is really painful when, you know, your friends are seemingly like getting pregnant at the drop of a hat or just like, we weren't even trying or it was our first try, you know, it's really frustrating. How did you deal with that mentally?
That part for me was right up there with like the big fear and uncertainty of whether this gets to be a part of my life. Friends getting pregnant, I think was like, those were my two. It got really, really intense for me. Mm-hmm. Should I dive into that now or
yes.
I was talking about before?
Yeah, let's dive into that. So, tell me what was happening.
Yeah, I think, you know, early on, the first few years, it was super painful, but I was like getting through it. And, you know, we'd like go to dinner with someone and they'd tell us the news and I'd have to like, and then go to the bathroom and like cry for a little bit. But I was like holding it together and, you know, the first year, I don't think we had told anyone we were even trying. Mm-hmm. Then it hit a breaking point where I was like, I'm struggling so much that if we don't tell people what's happening soon, like, I don't know that I will survive. Mm-hmm. So, well, my tangents, I'm like, as I tell the story, I'm remembering how many parts of this there was. Like,
I know. And also, does it give you like kind of, I don't, my story was a long time ago. My IVF baby is almost 9.
Wow.
But I still talk about it, I still get like that physical, it's almost like trauma brain or trauma blood comes rushing back.
Yeah.
Like, do you feel that way too?
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
I
it never really leaves
like,
you.
Healed from it. And then
I know. Okay. So yeah, I don't, it's totally fine if we bounce all over the place.
Yeah.
Tell me all the things you're thinking of.
Yeah. What just popped into my head was, you know, one thing that is often such a part of infertility is like the letting go of different dreams and different realities. And one of those was, you know, wanting to like surprise your parents out of nowhere. Like they don't even know you're trying and you get to do like the cute reveal and then everyone's crying and happy. And we weren't telling people because we're like, oh my, like they're going to be, that will feel so good. And then when we hit the year, I remember we're like going on a walk. We went on a lot of walks for those 5 years, just like breathing through stress and crying.
So many walks and so many bathrooms to cry in. When you said that earlier, I was like, oh my God, if I had a nickel for every bathroom.
Yes. So yeah, I remember thinking, I think we should tell our parents what we're going through, because this is now really hard and it just feels distancing that they don't know what's going on with us. And that was so sad because you're like, and now we never get to have that specific surprise. And now this whole thing is like colored with this sadness.
Oh my God. I totally know what you mean. It's like infertility robs you of so many things.
Yeah.
And that is one big one that it robs you of, giving them the onesie that says grandma on it, you know, like, things like that.
About? Yeah. Yes. So that was a tough moment.
When did you realize that you needed to go through some sort of treatment? Like, when did it get to that point?
Okay. So yeah, after 6 months, we did some preliminary testing. Everything was normal. So she was like, keep going. So we went, the details are fuzzy, but we kept going for a while. Maybe at a year, we did more tests. Things were normal. We started testing my husband. Things were a little off, but then actually we were able to like correct it with, I think actually getting off allergy meds helped him.
That's interesting.
Online, but like ping to anyone if your husband's on Allegra and Flonase every single day, maybe take a break.
Interesting. Yeah.
So, but then we got those normal, everything's normal. And my husband pretty early on was like, we can do IVF. Like there are options. And like the mention of that word, like made me want to die. It like made me so angry and so sad. And I was, don't want to do that. Like, I want it to be like magical and natural. And like, I don't want it to be cold and sterile and like someone doing it for us. And so I like it. That was a really tense thing between us because I just like, I am not ready to have that conversation. So he kept every few months would kind of bring it up and I'd get like really flooded and don't say that.
Yeah.
And just like went so hard into acupuncture and eating perfectly and exercising perfectly and all the things that you do. And we did that for like 3.5 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
And then, and it was like super, as you said, isolating. Like,
yes.
I wasn't talking to people about it much. And everyone in our circle was getting pregnant and it was just like so tough. And
yeah,
it was around then that I was like, I think I don't have much left. Like, this is getting too, like, the pregnancy announcements and baby showers and just like surviving. I think, I don't know if I was alone in this, but I reached a point where it was like all I could think about all day, every day was just, and you know, 100%. You're divided into these 2 week waiting periods, right? 2 weeks before we can even try again. And then 2 weeks before we know. And it was just like,
The like mental wherewithal, the like the toll that it takes on you physically, mentally, emotionally, sexually, you know, all these things. It's just like you reach a breaking point and it's like enough. So did you feel like you couldn't take it anymore trying just kind of on your own with all the other things that you were, you know, doing, but, and you were like, okay, maybe we will explore some sort of IVF or ART. Okay.
Yeah. I was, that was like, the point. Let's make an appointment. Like, I'm not saying we're going to do anything, but let's make an appointment and see what the options are. And so we went and it was still just like, so my body, even though I was starting to open to it, my body was still like really not ready. And just being in the waiting room, it's like, I'm not supposed to be here. And
nobody wants to be there. Nobody wants to do this. Yeah, I get it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the doctor called us in and she, you know, scanned everything and looked at stuff. And I remember her saying, I'm not worried, like, or like, don't worry, like, I can get you pregnant or we can get you pregnant or something that was supposed to feel really good. But me hearing it, like I can get out, it like broke my heart. I was like, you're not supposed to get me, like, you're not part of this equation. And it's just like, oh, so
that's such a great, thank you for saying that, because I think that's such a great way to describe it. It's like, what? Who's this third party?
I just met you. I don't really want you.
Right. And I get it. They're trying to help you and trying to make you feel better.
Yeah.
But heartbreaking is such a good way to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah. So she was like, you can start with an IUI. We could go into IVF. If you want to do an IVI, we can start like today and we could do it in a couple of weeks. And so we're like, okay. So did that. And
did you have any friends who had done IUI or IVF? Or were you still kind of keeping it like close to the vest at this point?
It was very close to the vest. I'm trying to remember if at this point I knew of maybe one person who had, or two people, one who had done IVF and one who had done some IUIs, but not people that are like, that I talk to a lot. So we go into that. I think it was like a pretty natural one. I wasn't on medication except for you got to do the trigger shot at the end. And that was a huge turning point for me because I had like mega needle phobia. And I remember like agreeing to it. I'm like, it's one shot. Like I can do it. It's fine. And then it give the trigger. And I knew it was coming in like 3 hours. And I was just so anxious, trying to distract myself. And then like with an hour to go, I'm suddenly like, I can't do this. And I will be really mad at my husband if he does it. And I was like, do I need to like drive to my parents and make them do it? Like, oh no, this is suddenly impossible.
And yes.
Feeling like so victim-y because I hadn't quite like done the work to be there. And I was feeling so sad for myself and so angry and mad. And then we had in our room, the room we always imagined would be the nursery. Eventually over the years got just like filled with stuff. It became like the junk room.
Gotcha.
And I was like, like the energy's not right. And so with an hour ago, I like cleared out the room and I made a little altar in the corner. And I was like, I have to, like, this has to be mine. Like this can't, I can't be a victim. And I like light all these candles and like meditated a lot. And
oh my God,
it's like super intense, but it kind of set the tone for what ended up being like an additional year plus of IVF after that. But I brought my husband in and we kind of like created a ritual around it and like put on music and like we would hold the shots and infuse them with love and be like, we're choosing this and like we're opening if you're there. And
I love that. I just got the chills.
It was like,
that's really cool.
It was this close for me just like being a complete wreck and just failing to be right. Like, I can do this. And so
you like made a decision to own it and like make it your own and bring your passion into it too, which is really cool.
So, I gave myself my first shot that night and I felt like the bravest person in the world.
Badass.
I am amazing. And then,
it didn't work. Is that what you said?
Didn't work. But it was like, there was a shift in that moment where I was like, okay, I had always seen this path as like, I'm a victim. This isn't how it's supposed to be. And when I say this, I also want to give the disclaimer, like I didn't project these feelings on anyone who had done it. I wasn't like your child is less than, but just for what I was thinking into and my body was like, this isn't what it's supposed to be and not what I wanted, you know?
Yes. I get that so much. Yeah.
And then that in that moment I was like, oh, I think there is a way to do this and like really infuse it with meaning and purpose. Cause if I don't, like I personally will die of like sadness. I mean, it was still the hardest thing I've ever done, even doing it with meaning. But like for me, that helped me get through to like as much as I could make it like a little magical and a little positive and a little like this can be a beautiful path. Even though I don't know it's going to work, like, can I make it not only suffering?
Yeah. I think it's like a little bit of a control thing too, right? Like you have, it's so much is out of your control that if you can infuse, like you said, some of your own self and make it a little more special in its own way, like that helps you, you know, it's like helps the medicine go down literally.
Yeah,
spoonful of sugar. Okay, so you did the IUI, unfortunately didn't work. And then did you do more IUIs or move on to IVF?
After that, we moved on to IVF.
Okay.
So this was now like January of 2020.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I remember that year. Oh boy. So let me ask you this before you keep going with the chronology. Had you started writing music and things about what you were going through, or even like jotting down your thoughts, or was this coming out of you in like a creative process?
Yeah, I think, gosh, it's hard for me to remember when I started actually letting myself outwardly process, well, inward and outwardly process. Mm-hmm. I think I had started writing. The first major one that was about this was my song In the Waiting. And and I kept that song a secret for a very long time.
I did.
And then I shared it, but nobody knew what it was about. So I would like sing it and be on the verge of tears and nobody knew why. And eventually I started talking about what it was about. But that was a very helpful moment because, like we were talking about earlier, it's so easy for like every minute of every day to be caught up in the pain and uncertainty and fear and sadness and victimhood and all that, which is kind of in many ways unavoidable. So it's not like don't feel those things because it's really hard. But I was so future focused. I just wanted so desperately to skip to the point where it worked that I was like not in life at all. It was just like, this part's all filler. Like this doesn't count. I just need to get there. And then I had this moment where I kind of like came to and was like, oh shoot, like it's already been years and it might be years. And this is my life. Like it might not ever happen or it might happen. So, and I was just like, oh no, like I don't know how, but somehow I need to like honor this time too, because this is all that's real.
Wow. That's so profound. And it's so, again, such a great way to describe it, because I do think that when you're so laser focused on something and you've got the blinders on, it is easy to lose your day to day and to put off the just like the simple things and the big things as well. And, you know, you don't want to go to that wedding because you're going through treatment and it's not going to be fun if you can't drink alcohol or, you know, whatever it is. We don't want to plan a vacation because what if I have to go in for an appointment? And, you know, your life is so dictated by the timeline of your infertility stuff that it is very easy to lose yourself.
Yeah.
So I think that's very common. And again, it's one of those things you get robbed of is like, you know, all those years it was probably like, not to put words in your mouth, but can be somewhat of a blur. You're like, wait, how did 3 years pass by? And all I've really been thinking about, all I've really been thinking about is this, you know, you're living, you're kind of going through the motions.
Yeah.
But the forefront is this.
Yeah.
Hey y'all, it's Kelly Clarkson here to talk Wayfair. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
I had 100% done that. It's just...
Oh man. So it's so interesting that you made that shift. So were you able to change your behavior or lifestyle? Yeah.
You know what I think was a huge shift for me was... like just allowing it all a little bit more, like telling more people. And I know that's not the case for everyone. Some people do not want to share it all. For me, it was like terrifying and sad to talk about it with people. And also was like when healing and like deep connection started. So I started, you know, like even just like singing about it was one level of acceptance. And then like when I remember sharing with our families that like, we're going to start IVF and like crying so much then being like, okay, they know now and they know how hard it's been. And in my friend groups, just starting to open up more about how hard it had been kind of relieved the pressure of up until that point, like holding it all in, it was all like this poison pressure cooker inside of
me.
And then getting to like, let it out, just kind of diffused it a little bit. And I think also at some point, as times of like incredible suffering do, it can kind of like push you towards the things that you know are good for you. Like in my case, it was meditation and like reading books that felt like really healing and really like leaning into spirituality a little bit and just trying to be like, okay, trust. I'm trusting a bigger picture here and all those things, which like help you keep the thread slightly while you're like almost dying.
Totally. It's whatever it takes to ground you or give you that like bit of hope or something to hold on to. I got into a lot of that. I mean, I feel like I tried everything. I was like lighting magic wish papers with my family and like making everyone make a wish. You know, I was like every little, I went to a psychic, you know, like,
I felt like so many healers.
Yes. Drinking all the like herbs and going to Chinatown and buying, like all that stuff. I would make this drink that I'd had like choke down, but I was like, if this is the one thing that makes a difference, because you don't know what's going to be the thing, the tipping point, right?
Yes. I drank so many of those teas.
Totally.
They're so intense.
Tell me about your IVF experience and like the process with that.
Yeah. So let's see. We started in January. And I guess one other aside I will give is that like on the friend front, I had up until that point been able to like kind of maintain my relationships while it was very, very painful. And my husband and I, right before IVF, because I knew it was going to be intense, I was like, maybe we should start like couples therapy together before, like just so it's in place.
Smart. I love that. Yeah. Down. Brilliant.
And, yeah. We had a session and I remember I was kind of like dancing around like, you know, well, so-and-so got pregnant and like, it's almost like I feel angry, but I'm not angry because like they didn't do anything wrong. And I like kept saying this stuff and my therapist was like, you're allowed to feel angry. She's like, I know that, you know, you don't mean that in any way where it's their fault and you're not like mad at them. But like, if you have anger, like let yourself feel it. Mm-hmm. And it was the first day that I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so angry. And I just like bawled my eyes out. And it feels horrible to say that. It's one thing to be like, oh yeah, it's kind of hard for me or it's sad. But like, I realized I'm so angry and I know it's no one's fault. And then also I love them and I'm happy for them. And also just what's coming up in my body is anger, which I had not really felt much anger in my life up till that.
Right. Right. Cause I feel like we are conditioned to not, you know, you're a good person, obviously, and you love your friends and you want to be happy for them. But you know, when growing up, we're taught like you can feel this way or that way, but you can't feel both at the same time almost. So it's like, are you happy or are you sad? And I think going through this made me realize too, and it sounds like maybe it made you realize as well, you can be mad at somebody or like sad for yourself and happy for somebody else at the same time. And that's, you know, the feelings are very complex. You can be really, really angry, but also really happy for your friend, but so angry. That's the same, you know, it's like, and it's hard to like contend with those conflicting emotions, but I think you're exactly right. You have to honor that and you have to like let it out.
Yeah. So yeah, it was very big for me to kind of like accept that. And then I think that was around the time that I actually realized like, oh, I need to start protecting myself on another level, which also feels so bad, but like I'd been going to the baby showers and I'd been seeing all the people and it was like, so like my nervous system was just like horrible. And just, you know, you're like on the verge of tears the whole time. And so I got to a place where I was like, I think I have to stop.
Yeah.
I have to stop doing those things and seeing some people. And I remember I was in a group with some friends. We met weekly and we just kind of like spend a couple hours at night, like each person had 20 minutes to kind of talk about what they're going through in life. And we all help each other. It's a really beautiful thing. We'd been in it for a couple of years. And then at around this point, one of them was like, I don't know, 6 months pregnant. One was like 3 months pregnant. One just got pregnant. And I would go every time just like filled to the brim with anxiety and then try not to cry. And I remember the night I realized like, I don't think I can do this right now. And I called one of them who's like one of my best friends and it was so hard, but I had to be like, I'm so sorry. I think I have to like pull back and I love you so much and I'm so happy for you. And I gotta like pull back. So there was like a
I know it's hard. And like, clearly you're such a big hearted person, and that's not a natural feeling. You want to be there for your friends, you know? So yeah. And
there was a good year where I just was like not in the people's lives that I loved while they were getting pregnant and having babies.
Yeah.
And I eventually on the other side got to like have conversations about it and kind of make things.
Yeah.
But it was very, a thing I felt really bad about. And also a thing I knew, like, I just can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Gotta like focus on me.
Right. Just, like, you have to protect your heart.
Yeah.
And sometimes that means not being the type of friend that you're used to being, or support system. And that's also another thing that you get robbed of, right? It's like you weren't getting to be how you wanted to be, but you couldn't be. So,
that part is very heartbreaking.
Yes. I'm so sorry that you went through that.
Yeah. You know, infertility is filled with all its little gifts.
The worst.
Yeah. So, okay. January, we did our first round of IVF, and it's like before you do IVF, you kind of think, okay, well, if you do IVF, you do IVF and then you have a baby.
Like 100%. It's a guarantee. Yeah.
I'm pushing it off. And then, but when we do it, then you like do it and then there's a baby. And like, I didn't even realize starting that there's like, oh no, first there's the retrieval. And then.
Yeah. I didn't either. You know? Yes. Exactly. So I was
like, okay, we're doing it. And then like, oh, okay. I guess we're just doing a retrieval. And then also like the thing that was wild about IVF to me is there are an infinite number of things that can go wrong that you don't even know about. Like your numbers get weird, or you get a cyst and it's canceled. Or so it was like the wildest roller coaster. And at some point during this, we realized, okay, before every appointment, we need to start going, anything could happen. I hope for good things. And also it might be canceled today, just so I'm not like, the whiplash was so crazy.
Yes. That's so true. It's like, you don't know what you don't know. And you don't know that embryos might not make the thaw. You don't know that, you know, your lining might not be in the right place for a transfer. You know, all these things that you learn as you get into it and in the weeds of it.
Yeah.
But how would you know that otherwise if you're, unless you're going through it? So,
And you think about like the waiting periods you have during like trying naturally, you have the 2 weeks of waiting and then 2 weeks of waiting. But in IVF, it's like, there are so like you're saying, there's, well, all the way, like every other day going up to the retrieval, checking your numbers and the follicles and are they growing? Oh, one disappeared. One got too big. Oh, right. It's all, you know, and then you do the retrieval and you get this many and you're like, how many are mature? Okay. And then how many will fertilize and how many are still alive in 2 days? And then, and like, it's so much for a body to handle, to be on edge for so long.
It's so, that was so true. Just
like, there was, I feel like the last year of our journey was just like constantly sighing because my body was so stressed. I was just had to like, it was just so constant.
Yeah. It's, but, yeah, it's so true. So how many rounds did you end up doing? Yeah.
First round, we got 2 normal embryos. And then we were like, you know what, maybe if we want to have more than one child someday, maybe we should do another round right now. We did a second round right after. We got the same number of embryos at the beginning, like, or same number of eggs, same number of fertilized eggs. And then on like day 4, they all stopped. So like the second round, we got nothing.
No. Oh, I'm so sorry. That's so hard.
Yeah, it was very strange.
Again, you're like, well, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was so shocking. I don't even know that I'm sure I mourned it subconsciously, but I was just like shocked. I'm like, okay. All right.
Yeah.
And then we were about to go into either a third round or a transfer. And then COVID lockdown happened.
Mm.
And so there was a several month pause. I'm just like, oh, hey, guess
what's happening?
And then finally things opened again. And so we, even though we only had the 2 embryos, we're like, you know what, let's just like go for it. Let's transfer.
Right.
And we did our first transfer and it worked. And I had never in, you know, at this point, it's like 4 years of trying. I had never seen a positive test and never. Mm-hmm. So like it.
How did that feel?
It was like, I mean, I now can't remember finding out somehow, but like we were so happy and excited, and we did the, we like called a few family members and we got to do the, everybody's crying. I'm like, ah, it's so crazy. We like went on a walk and we were so happy. And I remember like an old man like passed us on the walk and he was just like commenting like, you two little lovebirds. Like it was just like,
we're like, yes, we are.
Joy.
Yes.
And then like a day later, that we do our second beta, and then it was gone.
Oh,
and that was like,
I'm so sorry.
Like, oof, it was very, very bad. And I, you know, I feel kind of like embarrassed almost.
Oh,
that like to have gotten so attached to like 2 days of
me. Oh no,
like, oh, like,
don't be embarrassed.
How long? And you're like, oh. I don't want to say because it was
no, you know, I know. But, yeah.
Yeah. You're like, I've been waiting 4 years and I finally did IVF and it worked. And the doctor said like numbers are great and you're pregnant. And then I told people I was pregnant and then it was gone. And we were like completely, completely wrecked for like a month. And
Yeah. Well, it's not because it's not just the 2 days. Like you said, it's the years leading up to it. And it's the
years and it's
the
like,
loss of the dream and the loss of the way you thought your life was going to go. And there's a lot of loss there. It's a lot of grief. And that's why I always say a loss is a loss. It doesn't matter if it was even the loss of an embryo or not getting any embryos, you know, a miscarriage, a chemical, a blighted ovum, a whatever it may be. I think it's all hard. I don't think, you know,
right.
You
can... It only takes like an instant for you to rewrite the trajectory of your life. And you're like, that person is here now. And I'm starting to think about them and that they're going to be here someday. And
100%, 100%. You know? Yes. And
like we, for like a week, we just like couldn't get out of bed and we're just crying. And then at some point I was like, we need help. Like, and it, I'm so grateful, but I remember like calling, I think we had a call with our family and then also my parents. I was just like, we need help. I don't know what I mean when I say that, but like, please help.
Like, please help us.
Yeah.
Yes. I love that. Yeah.
Came up and just like helped us move through life while we were like seriously grieving. And
yeah, I think that's why it kind of bothers me. And I know people are coming from, you know, a good place, but like, if you do have a miscarriage or a loss, how far along were you? And it's like,
yeah,
it's why like, does that matter? I mean, maybe it's just people, I don't know. It's just like, people don't know what to say, but I feel like it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah, it was tough. My husband during that month wrote a song about it called The Middle of July. He's also a musician.
Yeah.
That, if I listen to that song, it's still, oof, wrecks me big time.
Yeah.
But yeah, time passed and we slowly like started to be able to
pick
function
yourself up. Yep. Yep.
And then we were faced with like, okay, we have one embryo. We're doing a transfer. We're doing another retrieval. The clinic I'd been at, it had started, there had been a lot of signs, but you know, in your infertility, you don't want to lose a day. So you're like,
totally.
Just keep going. I don't want to consider anything else, but
yeah.
So we went back, we had an appointment. And then we're about to, again, go into either a retrieval or a transfer. And luckily, I had this horrible blood draw with this, like, super rude, mean phlebotomist.
Yeah.
And I was, like, traumatized when I came out. And my husband was just like, no, like, we're done.
Not doing it. Yeah.
And so we pivoted. And thankfully, our friend who was, like, our kind of IVF pioneer before us, she was like, change and go to this place. And trust me, like, it's going to be night and day.
Oh, good.
And so we looked at a bunch of places. We ended up choosing a new place. And it was like such a better experience.
Where do you live? Where are you? You don't have to say specifically. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, we pivoted. We did then our third retrieval cycle. which went like wildly better than our first two.
With the new doctor, new medical team, new clinic.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, yeah, so we did that, waited a few months, and then we did our second transfer that eventually turned into our now living human daughter. But it was, again, when you talk about the things that IVF robs from you, I think because of our first loss and like all the trauma that I had, when we got the news that this one worked, and then even like the next beta and the heartbeat, like my first trimester was like the biggest depression of my life. Like, I think my body was protecting itself so much that I was like, I don't even remember wanting to be pregnant. I don't feel any joy. I feel a lot of fear, and this was a big mistake. So like,
oh my God, thank you for saying that.
Yeah. I'm like, wait, I got the thing. Like I want to be able to tell people and be excited, but all of my pregnancy announcement texts to my friends were like, so, you know, it worked and I'm very fearful and I'm having a very hard time and I don't feel happy yet. And like, that's the pregnancy announcement I get to say. You're like, come on.
Right. Totally.
Yeah.
I get it. I mean, that makes so much sense considering everything that you'd been through up until that point. You know, there's not that unabashed like joy and ignorance is bliss and all that stuff. It's just, you know, it's scary.
Yeah. But then got through it. And I think it was like when I first felt like a kick or something, there was like a slight switch that flipped. I was like, somebody's here.
Oh my somebody's God. There. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And, you know, since like you're saying, there's like so much gratitude that she exists. And all of that is infused in this experience. And I feel so lucky. But man, like that's.
Yes. And how old is she now?
She just turned 3.
Oh my God. I love 3. That's such a good age. So, I'm 3.
That's so wild.
Well, is there anything else more to the story or you want to?
You know, I forgot a significant thing, which was the moment when I found community, which like, you know, all about, and I know you orchestrate that for people.
Yeah.
It wasn't for me until a few months after starting IVF. Again, the same friend that told us about the other clinic was like, there is this infertility support group and Kina should consider joining it. And again, one of those things where I was like, but I'm like about to be pregnant. So I don't want to join it now because it's like I'm about to be pregnant and you keep pushing it off and on.
Totally.
Like, I'm not actually part of that though. Then eventually I was like,
yes,
I'll do it. And I had a group of, I think it was like 12 other women, and we met weekly for a few months. It was like the most healing thing
to
meet other people. And everyone's story was different, but like,
was it Fertility Unfiltered?
Yeah.
Ah, with Victoria.
Yes.
I love her.
Yeah. She's so wonderful. It was so helpful. I loved everybody in my group and just like hear their stories and cry about the same things and be like, wait, you get how hard a baby shower is? Like, I'm not a bad person. That's hard for me.
Just, yes.
Like, normalizing it was so healing. And we all like afterwards stayed in touch and like cheered each other on through all of our treatments. And also like, I remember the moment when I found that there was like an infertility community on Instagram that I
know
missed for like 4 years. And then I was like, oh my gosh. And
I know.
Just like that was so healing. Just seeing other people going through a transfer, going through a retrieval and posting their numbers. I was like, it's almost addicting, but like the content I needed was just like, show me IVF all day.
Totally. Oh my God. It. I know. I didn't have it when I was going through it, but that's why I got so involved in, you know, trying to create stuff that wasn't there. Can you tell me, Kina, how, if somebody's going through this, you know, that might be kind of new to infertility, what do you know now that you didn't know then that you'd like to pass along to somebody?
I would first say like, trust where you are and like, don't push yourself to be anywhere other than that. Cause I know some people like, they're like, just do this. It's not a big deal. It's like, you know, if you're not ready for the next step, it feels horrible. So like honor where you are. And also know that everything you're feeling is valid. And there are like thousands of people that feel the same way. You're not a bad person. This is legitimately like extremely painful and difficult. And yeah, allow the feelings and let yourself be where you're at with it. And also know this part's not a light feeling part, but like it was helpful for me just to remember while you go through it, like things can always get off track. Just like being prepared, be hopeful and hope for that thing and know at any point there's like a thousand things you've never heard of that can crop up. Just to save yourself a little of the emotional whiplash to kind of know that. So when you think I'm starting IVF or IUI doesn't mean and I'm pregnant in a month, it's like, and we'll see.
All right. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you so much to Kina Granis. Check out her music, her song In the Waiting, and all the other songs. I mentioned a cover of Dream a Little Dream, which is just dreamy. So check that out as well. But she's just really brilliant. And I can't thank her enough for opening up her heart and her life and sharing all the things she did with us today. Also, guys, check out my children's book, which is called Work of Art. You can find it on my website at infertileafgroup.com. It is a great gift for somebody if they are going through infertility, if they did go through it, if they had a kid through IVF or ART, or if you know somebody who just wants to know more about it. The whole point of the book is just to normalize the conversation. So check it out at infertileafgroup.com. Also, don't forget to check out Fertility Rally. I'm here for you guys. If you need me, I'm on DM at InfertileAF Stories. And also you can DM me at Fertility Rally. So I hope you're doing well. I hope you're having a good day. I hope you enjoyed Kina's story. I definitely did. And I will talk to you guys next time. Thanks.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. Some of y'all might have heard I made the cross-country move from LA to New York last year, and Wayfair has definitely helped me create the feeling of home wherever I am. I love a cozy couch and a comfy living room that feels like our little sanctuary for our family. And I love vases, I love candles, I love anything that kind of makes you feel at home and peaceful. Anyway, something about me is I love options when it comes to making my home more me. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. Everyone loves a good deal. I mean, who does not want free and fast and easy delivery? Come on. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.